Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'd like to call to order the joint meeting with Ralph County Board of County Commissioners and the Ralph County Planning Commission. Because this isn't, I don't know what kind of meeting I want to call this, because it's primarily a work session, we don't need necessarily quorum, but I would like to go around and introduce everyone. So with that thought in mind, from the Board of County Commissioners, Beth Melton is here, Tim Corrigan, Doug Monger. From the Planning Commissioner standpoint, Greg Yeager, who is new to the commission, I might add, Jeff Pettis, Bill Norris, Brian Kelly also is new to the commission, Carl Kaler, Andy Benjamin, Roberta Marshall, Troy Wilshire, and I think I got myself, Steve Warnke. And then from planning staff, Chad Phillips, Director, Christy Windsor, Assistant Director, Alan Goldich, Tegan Anderson, and Chris Brookshire. So that constitutes the panel, shall we say, for today. A bit of housekeeping, number one. I appreciate if all cell phones are either silenced or turned off. Number two, there should be a sign-up sheet for the public circulating. I can see something. Okay, good. Please sign that for us so we know who's here. And then lastly, because these proceedings are available to the public to monitor by telephone, it's important that we all use the microphones. So particularly the public, if you're choosing to address the commissioners, I'd appreciate it if you use the lectern. Thank you. Public comment. At this point in time, this particular public comment is available for anyone who wishes to address the commissioners and the BCC, technically, on any item that is not on the agenda this evening. Hearing none, we'll close that portion. I might add that we will have time for public comment. My sense is we'll do it on an agenda item by agenda item basis. Makes as much sense. I would ask that the comments are somewhat limited, as we have a lot going on this evening. Thank you. Summary of 2018 amendments to the regulations. Christy, is that you?
That is.
Me?
So the county makes annual housekeeping amendments to the regulations. We generally, when possible, try to schedule these during a joint session. And that is to shave off an extra step of the review process and to help reduce review time. So on this screen is a summary of the 28th amendments and regulations. And these amendments focused mainly on streamlining processes, clarification of our regulations, and supporting affordable housing options in the county. And just to briefly go over what those were, with regard to water body setbacks, the discussion revolved around reviewing definitions and how we process permits for them. And moving on to secondary dwelling unit regulations, the county has now made allowances for all residential zone districts to be eligible to have a secondary dwelling unit, when in the past, this was only allowed in the AF zone district. So now you can have that with 5 acres and below 5 acres. However, if you have 5 acres or below, it needs to be serviced, the dwelling unit needs to be serviced by central water and sewer system. The overall square footage of those dwelling units did not change. That remains at 100 square feet. But the county did move to amend the max separation from a primary dwelling unit, and that was reduced from 300 feet to 200 feet if under 35 acres. And although this was not a planning amendment, it is something to note that we anticipate seeing more tiny home applications coming through. This is because of amendments to International Building Code, which now allows our building department to process. There is a process now for tiny homes. They do need to be on a foundation. If they are not, then planning staff, the planning department reviews them as under our camping regulations. So that's just something to note, changes from the past year. And last, we restructured the planned unit development process. Again, the goal is to streamline the process, and we no longer have a second step necessary for a change of zone, so that happens automatically with the approval of the PUD. So, did anybody have any questions about those amendments or regulations? Moving on.
Continue on, please.
Thank you. So next, we're going to be discussing our short-term rentals in Route County and have a master plan update discussion. So a lot of you are asking why we're having this discussion, and the goal is really to provide a summary of this issue to our new members and commissioner, and to formalize direction to staff. Planning staff was directed to schedule numerous work sessions starting back in 2015. As you can see, we've had four work sessions, and last there was a joint meeting discussion on this topic back in 2017. And to briefly go over the issues that were discussed at that time, we discussed code enforcement issues surrounding secondary dwelling units. We also discussed the city's process and management of secondary dwelling units. And we also discussed and explored potential revenue for the county through the county's lodging tax. However, we are here. The intent is not to have an in-depth discussion about that at this time. But if we're directed to do so, we can certainly provide updates at future discussions. This topic has been on our project list since 2015. And at that last discussion of the joint meeting, and I think it was, staff was directed by Planning Commission, mainly that, you know, the master plan does allow for short-term rentals. And it is...
So we didn't have any minutes of that. We should have had the minutes on that.
From the joint meeting?
Yeah, or with the meeting when the Planning Commission decided that it wasn't compliance with the master plan.
Wouldn't those minutes be there? Wasn't that
they are available.
That would be a regular meeting.
They weren't included in the packet. We could certainly send them to you, Doug.
But I mean, on that note, Doug, if I may, I mean...
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the Planning Commission basically developed a consensus that, in effect, said short-term rentals are fine in the growth areas and in commercial zones, and thereafter, commissioners, we didn't really feel we wanted them any further in the county. And I know that was a consensus at the time.
Right.
And I think that's reflected in the minutes.
It is. However, that recommendation, and that was never formalized. So it's been sitting out there, this topic, and the point of tonight is to have a final decision and some direction on where we go with short-term rentals.
I'm not a final decision.
What did you say again?
Well,
I don't know.
It could be.
A final decision on whether or not short-term rentals are allowed under the master plan.
Well, that conversation that Christy was referring to that the Planning Commission had, my recollection was, the question was, would that process to allow short-term rentals be allowed under the master plan? And different policies were quoted under the master plan that were, you know, Planning Commission's opinion pretty clear that no, that process would not be allowed. But it didn't really, focus a whole lot on the next question, and that was, should that issue be part of a master plan amendment process? I mean, has the community changed enough on their position on short-term rentals since 2003 that we should make it a part of that process? One of the reasons why it remained on the anticipated project list from the planning department, because it never really received conclusion as far as, you know, the fork in the road, where do we go from here? Is it put to bed, or is it still on the table to be discussed under the amendment process?
So when I'm fine with having the conversation tonight, and that's why we're here, I asked to have it on here too, because we either need to start enforcing it and putting it to bed by enforcing it, or we figure out, because I still continue to believe that it's not allowable in our master plan right now. And secondly, we talk about it's allowable in the commercial areas. We have five of those that are a quarter acre apiece across the whole county, so that's irrelevant. And then we have the growth areas. Well, the growth areas are already incorporated into municipal boundaries. We don't even have any growth areas that are outside the donut hole, maybe a donut, around. So it's irrelevant, because supporting and having rentals in the growth areas means it's supported in the municipalities. It doesn't support it outside of municipalities in our rural route county. And so, and I'm supportive of all this discussion we're going to have tonight, especially when it goes back to where we're going to be talking about the master plan and the boundaries of what we're going to be trying to do. We still have to recognize that the cities have their own rules for what they want to do, and we're talking about the rural things that we're doing. So, again, I don't know. And then if you guys all read the news today, that the ballot for the West Estimo got enough signatures on it. So
still to be certified.
Say what?
They still need to be
certified. No, I don't understand that. But again, so we asked to have all this stuff on our conversation plate, but I'm a little worried that some of this might be a little premature in all of our conversations.
Okay. Well, the next screen slide that Christy has up on the screen is what we saw as possible outcomes for this discussion tonight.
Okay.
You know, and that sort of why we're jumping on the slide, Christy. Yeah. You know, to basically, if we're going to move forward, direct us to perform that research. You know, what have just all the parameters associated with this topic, you know, and schedule the work sessions to determine if it should be part of the master plan amendments, you know. And then the second one is basically to conclude that the master plan is still active and that no further action will be taken at this time. And that last one, obviously, there's not enough information to make either one of those, table it, and we'll get back to you. So it wasn't intended to be an in-depth discussion about the merits, pros and cons, enforcement issues. We can answer all that if you have those types of questions. But we're in a fork in the road right now. If you've been on the anticipated project list for a long time, what direction do we go? That's why
I agree.
Okay, thanks.
I feel unclear, and maybe I could get some clarification from you on this. I requested the minutes from when this was discussed last time, because obviously I was not there. It was unclear to me what the final conclusion of that was on a couple of points. So one was, it seemed like it stated that it's allowed in the growth areas, but it wasn't clear to me. And then I think there was some language, I apologize, I didn't bring those minutes with me, around and nearby areas or something to that effect.
In the vicinity,
thank you.
Yeah.
So to me, I feel really unclear on, so does that mean they're actually allowed in treehouse based on that interpretation where we've been doing some code enforcement? To the point that was made around finalizing and clarification, I don't know if it's regulatory in nature, what needs to happen, but it seems to me, just from looking at those minutes, that there still is a lack of clarity about what was decided at this previous point.
Well, that in the vicinity of the growth centers basically defers to the sub-area plan, the jointly adopted comprehensive plans for those municipalities. So you would have to focus on an area like Treehouse, open the Steamboat plan, and see if that kind of use is allowed under those plans. But for the most part, I think Doug alluded to that earlier, that most of that new development is after annexation, that we're not going to do much of that in the county. And, you know, and it was a pretty broad net. I think the intent was that we're not going to approve projects in a city or town's growth area, but maybe something like this where, you know, the homes are already there, it's just adding a new use, you know, really wasn't taken into consideration through those comprehensive plan updates. Hopefully that helps.
So am I the only one who, and if I'm the only one, that's fine, because I understand I'm new, but that doesn't feel like there was final clarity on some of this based on that I mean, is there a need for something more regulatory in nature to happen in order to have a conclusion to this question?
I think, again, I'll speak for the Planning Commission, but, you know, they can throw something at me if they choose and disagree. But, I mean, we kind of went backwards and forwards on it and ultimately concluded that, hey, if we were to change something, you have to go back to the master plan. And the Planning Commission felt that we weren't really interested in changing the master plan to accommodate the VRBOs in the county. And that was our consensus, and I think we looked into the BCC and say, okay, you tell us. And that's kind of how I view its words out.
That's correct. I think that was very, that came across very clear at the 2015 last Planning Commission work session. And it kind of didn't go further at that point, but then staff was directed to schedule this again at the joint meeting in 2017 to discuss it again. And I don't think there was consensus among the Board of County Commissioners at that time. And as you can read in the minutes, there was no conclusion or direction to staff. So that's why we felt it appropriate to bring it back now to get that direction. Yes?
How many code enforcement reports do you have a year?
For vacation home rentals, for terminals?
Yeah.
You know, it's increasing, and mainly because we got 13 at once. One of the local metro districts was a little concerned about the impact of having 12 people stay in a home, you know, at a party over a weekend, multiplied times 12. And so that was the biggest bump that we had seen. I would say before that, in a typical year, half a dozen or less. And trying to get our hands around the numbers as far as what kind of problem are we looking at. That Chris Berkshire and I both did studies on our own. That if we were a consumer looking for a short-term rental in unincorporated Rout County, Google it, how many can we find? And going to all of the different websites that showed up on a search, we both added up in the low 50s. And that was before the treehouse enforcement issue. And there are about a dozen of those that should be off the books. So I would anticipate there's about 40 out there right now that have not been subject to an enforcement.
And they're not legally registered, they're not legal entities.
Not legal, correct.
Okay. And it's also
we don't have no registration.
Yeah. There's no means by which right. they can be illegal. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'll direct a couple of questions to you, Chairman Warnke. So when the Planning Commission reviewed this, they determined that Stagecoach was not a growth center, therefore not eligible for short-term rentals under the master plan?
I don't think so.
No, Stagecoach was included in the vicinities around growth centers, and they specifically mentioned Stagecoach as possibly being allowed because it had a sub-area plan.
And it's a potential growth center, I believe.
Right.
Correct.
So under the current master plan, if we chose to move forward, Stagecoach could be eligible for short-term rentals.
Right. No. Well, I'll back up.
I'd like to get that clarified.
During the update of the Stagecoach community plan, there was a short list of items, and this may have been one, that could be appropriate in Stagecoach that members of the Stagecoach community brought up. And I said that to use the zoning regulations to support this amended Stagecoach plan, could petition the county for a Stagecoach zone district that may allow these types of things. But so it could be a Stagecoach residential or whatever you're going to call it.
But as it currently exists, Stagecoach is not actually considered a growth center.
It's a potential
growth center. A potential growth center. Okay, and then the next question I have, and maybe this is for everybody in general, let's just say for some reason, hypothetically speaking, that we as a group determined that the master plan may, in fact, without amendment, may, in fact, allow for short-term rentals. Would we be obligated to find a way to include them in our zoning regulations?
I think my response to that is that there's no way the existing master plan has anything in support of short-term rentals. So the question doesn't seem to really be, doesn't fit.
But he did say hypothetically.
So, looking at this, what you have up here on the screen, Chad, you've kind of presented us with a binary choice, and I'm thinking that that's not quite the path that I'm ready to move forward on. I can see the benefit in directing staff to perform research, schedule public sessions, and to determine whether or not there's will in the community to allow for short-term rentals. If we're generally in agreement, then they're simply, we're not able to allow them at this time without an amendment to the master plan. But that doesn't necessarily obligate us to a course of approving short-term rentals. So, does that make sense to you, what I'm saying?
Well, it does, but I don't think you've got support for it. In other words, if that was a motion, I don't think you'd carry it. I mean, I don't have any problem.
Well, I'm not suggesting that we move forward now and say tonight that we think we should be amending the master plan in order to allow for short-term rentals. What I'm saying is I think I still need more information, and there's some specific data points that I'd be happy to offer later on as to the kind of information that I would need in order to make any kind of a recommendation as to whether we should pursue this any further beyond the data gathering stage.
Doug. So I think that we got the next one of the next item is the master plan update. I really feel, again, I wanted to have this short-term rental discussion because I'm tired of having people that are flaunting the law, that are flaunting our enforcement, and that are flaunting, you know, I'm sorry, that's not, should not be allowable. And especially when they're advertising, I think we ought to go out there hard enforcement. Now, a second part of that thing would be the discussion of the master plan update. If we threw the, and in the whole holistic approach of all of Rock County, including redefining the growth centers, which shouldn't, I mean, if the growth centers are only municipalities, why are we even talking about it? Because we don't have any control there. So if we're going to have the master plan, and yeah, the 2003 master plan, you know, and again, it is still performing. It has worked great, I believe, for our county. It defines who we are and what we've been and done. I don't have a lot of problems with it, but I'm not into having a wholesale, I'm not into, you know, nitpicking with the master plan adjustment just to allow for short-term rentals at this point in time. And I'm fine with, let's have the discussion about maybe more commercial. And again, my comment about the city and the steamboat and the west of steamboat plan, we're going to have to address the west of steamboat plan. If the west of steamboat plan is going to continue to fail for us, and something was put in place in 1995, 1992, if it continues to fail, something, we're missing out. And I know Commissioner Melton has some interest in affordable housing and things like that, and they don't seem to be getting taken care of at the city level. So somehow, if we're going to be able to figure out how we're going to address people and keep our rural and working landscapes and production that we're trying to have, and 1 per 35, which I still support, I think that we still ought to, you know, maybe move into the discussion on the master plan update, figure out how much money we want to throw at that thing, how that process is going to be. I think that's the best opportune for our discussion tonight, is how that process is going to be, and then we roll this thing into that thing as we move along too, because there's some other things that, you know, the 2003 master plan, you know, we've all been accepting of that, thinking it's a great thing. So, you know, but at the same point in time, I think it's time now to go out there and ask our public about, and us tonight, to identify that process and how we're going to be moving forward with that. When we asked you guys to do that the last time in 2016-17, you know, we really addressed it back again at that, well, is it broken? Do you think some things need to be changed? And you guys came back to us, in which we agreed, well, really, no, it's not. But then if we start talking to other people out there, there's a lot of things that are missing in the master plan. Transportation impacts and our interaction with our communities and the rest, the Hayden, Oak Creek, Yampa, and Steamboat Springs. So I don't know. I'll leave it at that.
So I'd like to support one thing that Commissioner Mauger said. I'm certainly not interested in pursuing an update of the master plan expressly for the purpose of finding a way to allow short-term rentals. I mean, that conversation will come up in the process of it, but I wouldn't do it just so that we can allow short-term rentals.
Yeah, thank you. I would agree with that. That as well, and I know maybe it sounds like maybe we're moving a little bit toward the next agenda item, but I still would like to address. I heard Christy say possibly short-term rentals are allowed in Stagecoach, and we're talking about the growth areas and the vicinity, and I'm not convinced that the public would have sufficient clarity that if I live in Steamboat 2, am I allowed to have a short-term rental, yes or no? Maybe I just don't have all the right information, but if I don't have it, I would tell you that the public probably doesn't either. And
I think I can help clarify that a little bit. I'm pretty sure that they're just simply not allowed right now. The question is whether or not we can allow for them within our zoning regulations, which, do I have that right? Our zoning regulations do not allow for short-term rentals in unincorporated Route County.
Correct.
That's correct.
Period. And a change in the regulations is
so it has a matter. But as of today, it's a black and white answer. No, they're not allowed.
But so I understand what you're saying, and that piece of information I did have. But the place that I feel confused about this is that if I look at the minutes from the meeting where this was last discussed, and some of the things that I just heard from planning staff, there was not a clear conclusion, and there was discussion of these ideas of vicinity and growth areas and where they're allowed and where they're not allowed. It wasn't, they are not allowed, period, any place in, I think, what I heard you just say was that, and maybe I'm mistaken.
Right. Well, as for the regulations right now,
right,
they are not allowed outside of a commercial zone.
Okay.
District.
And like Doug said, there's very little commercial zoning in the county.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. So the regulations are currently clear.
Yes.
And I guess...
And then the policies that were discussed, there are a few
don't
that
seem
could
to
be,
match those
that
regulations.
That could be interpreted differently. Like when some policies talk about development, what is development? And we had those discussions back then. And I think Planning Commission ultimately was all on the same page. I don't think the Board of County Commissioners at that time all agreed with that.
So there's a mechanism for agreeing or not agreeing, which is taking formal action to make a decision about that kind of thing, and whether a change to the regulations is going to be made. So I guess I'm a little confused about, did that happen or did that not happen?
I missed the question. Say again.
Was there formal action taken to determine whether...
No, we all agreed that the master plan was there and that the short-term rentals were not in compliance with the master plan.
But that's not what I just heard Christy say. Thank you.
I think Steve... When staff came back and said, oh, well, there was no clear direction, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's staff's interpretation. But I agree with Doug's comment at the last joint meeting, it was shot dead. And I can tell you, at Planning Commission, it was unanimously shot dead in regard to amending the master plan law, not just the short-term rent. So I think I was as taught as anybody else that this thing's now back out there saying, oh, we don't know. I thought it was pretty clear.
So I guess I would generally agree with what you just said. I think it was fairly clear. The Planning Commission made a determination whether or not they actually took action, but there was a consensus opinion, obviously, that was developed that short-term rentals were not compatible with the master plan.
Agreed. There was no motion or vote at all.
And that there was no desire to change the master plan in order, and I understood that from the minutes, but what I hear is that there may be interpretations of the master plan that would allow for a change in the regulations in some ways that was never, was not.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I think what you heard, I think Christy did say something along the lines that Stagecoach might be eligible if it was a growth area. But as it is right now, it is a potential growth area, not a growth area. So, you know, we may be splitting hairs here, but maybe we could do something in the master plan where we made a determination the Stagecoach was in fact a growth area, and then it would suddenly become eligible for short-term rentals.
But there's still that zoning issue that it's only allowed in the commercial district. So that's whether it's Stagecoach or not. And like I said, there was that discussion during the Stagecoach update that should we create a specific residential zone district in Stagecoach that would allow for things that aren't permitted elsewhere.
I don't think you even have to go to the level of zoning. If you want to go there, you can take the map, because I'm not sure what people are looking at. Is some of the hinterlands up Lakes Pass. But if you want to take, I don't know, to Eagles Watch on the south, and you got Meadow Green and South Shore with no utilities, but it's as easy as a map. I mean, I don't know if you want to change zoning.
You mean like an overlay?
Yeah, district. I mean, it's a thought.
Andy. Doug, were you saying that you would advocate, let's say that if the annexation gets shot down again, that's like a referendum from the people that the West of Area plan is non-functional, and that would trigger a master plan update?
No, I think we need a master plan update
before?
Without the having the issue, the West Steamboat going down or nothing. I think we still. I just think it might be a little premature, based on, because I think we do need to see what happens with that referendum before we start, you know, at least get way down in the dirt on our master plan and what we do. Because I think, personally speaking, as a commissioner myself, if the city can't facilitate having some West Steamboat growth going on because of the referendum process, I think the county's going to have to figure out how to do that. We advocated for that 2 years ago, three, 4 years ago, you know, here and there. So, well, we'll wait and let the process go along a little bit more. How long do we need to wait to figure out how it's broken and mean can't find housing for our people and our workers and the rest? And so,
at that point, when the process opens up, does that open up the door then for changes to?
Well, that's what I was advocating for, the whole, you know, us having the whole rewrite of the master plan.
I have a big issue with the, in this particular process, when you're permitting something that, like, say, occurs in a residence that is advertised or recorded as a two-bedroom, one bath, but is advertised as sleeping 20... eight bedrooms, you know, there has to be a process for guaranteeing the safety of the public, because that's what we do to hotels, that's what we do to commercial properties, is that they have to go through this, what some would say is an onerous process, to help ensure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. You know, there's that case down in Mexico or in Aspen a couple years ago where people die of carbon monoxide poisoning. If a city or the county was part of that permitting process, damn straight, I'd be suing you too.
Let me interrupt, Andy. I think we're getting a little too deep into the weeds in terms of the specifics around short-term rentals. I think you raised a good issue. If we decide to do an update in the master plan, you are running the risk that the result of that master plan, there may be an allowance for short-term rentals.
It's not
that does not exist today. Right. And so I would use the same logic that I used before. I don't want to do an update of the master plan just for the idea that we're going to have short-term rentals. I also don't want to refuse to do an update of the master plan because there may be some risks the short-term rentals are allowed at the end of it. I think Commissioner Mocker's done a pretty good job of articulating the reason why we should have a master plan update without even talking about short-term rentals.
So let me put words in your mouth.
That'd be great. Thank you. I generally have enough.
In the end, specific to the short-term rental issue, it's a non-issue because the zoning is in place as is, the rules are in place as is, and they have not been changed. So, on a going forward basis, on the next agenda item, there will be a movement underfoot to review the master plan. And to your point, whether that adversely or positively impacts the VRBOs, we'll see.
That's the problem.
Is that words?
You've said it.
Makes sense.
Right.
Yes. So I think to circle back to the question that I was asking, I mean, and now I understand and have some clarity about what was discussed before, and that the conclusion was that our regulations and our master plan as currently written do not allow short-term rentals anywhere in the county, and that period.
Period.
Except commercial zone districts. Which virtually don't exist.
I think the confusion is the use of words like possibly and vicinity and like either, and we're saying it's black and white.
I just got rid of that part.
Yeah, then let's talk about it like it's black and white. I mean, because I think it causes confusion when we don't.
So I guess my objective hopefully tonight was to inform, and from my perspective as a county commissioner, we have been on a complaint-driven basis for enforcement.
Yes.
And talking to our county attorney, that doesn't need to be that way on nightly rentals. Mm-hmm. And so I'm ready to pull the chain on this thing and say, enough is enough. You've been warned. You've been told they're not allowed, and that we move on and we start enforcing it. And so my hope tonight was to come just maybe a little test the waters here with you guys and the rest, because, you know, this is outside of our normal enforcement process. In the past, we've been on a complaint and we turn a blind eye to whatever we don't know and don't see. It would be a selective enforcement on the nightly rental thing, and personally, I would support that. I think it's been blatant enough, and they've been flaunting it in our face. And so I'm ready to say enough is enough.
I won't speak for the commissioners, but I'll speak for myself.
That would be ours. No. That would be our discretion.
But I would agree.
And
I would
again, we still have to go through a court process to do all this stuff anyhow. And so, you know, we'd have to have some type of agenda item to further that as well.
The reality that's also out there is, and I can't say all of them, but I'm convinced a high percentage of the developments in the county that have covenants and restrictions all have the language in them that say there'll be no rentals. Long term, yes, but not short term. And I think a little bit of what's been happening, even the HOAs have been kind of putting their head between their legs and kind of ignoring it, unless it got out of hand and then they got
a problem, like Treehouse.
Well, I'm going farther north.
Okay.
You know, do the Willow Creeks or the Badger Meadows or those people.
Yeah.
I know they're in the covenants. And I know that there are one or two nightly rentals in there that it's the same story. It's enforcement by action. And so if they're being rented and nobody says anything and they're not being a problem, people look the other way. But I think that enforcement action by the county would probably strengthen the HOA's positions, which is why I'm supporting it. I personally. Anybody else want to chime in?
So that was part of our stagecoach discussion when we had that, was that most of the HOAs down there were part of that, but then now we're getting information that maybe it's not being as functional as it could be.
I couldn't agree more with Doug. The last thing that I did on my original tenure on the Rock County Planning Commission was adopt that master plan. I think the minutes or the agenda showed that was my last meeting. I didn't realize or didn't know when I was asked to come back whether the community had changed. And over the last couple, 3 years, I don't think it has. And to support that, as I know, in 2017, and again tonight, there were letters of solicitation, email, to all the real estate brokers and property management companies in Steamboat Springs. In 2017, it was one person who came and spoke in favor of 90 rentals. He owns a management company. So when the public, at least in my view, the public hasn't told me, and I haven't seen the public telling me that, oh my God, all those policies and goals and tenets in the master plan suck, and Rapp County sucks, and you guys need to change it. I deleted the list I had in 2017 about a month ago because I thought that was dead. So I had to go back page by page to the master plan 2 days ago. There's probably a little bias in it, but I counted over 20 items in the master plan that I can certainly argue that does not support nightly rentals. Plus, the action item 12.4E on page 40 that said amend the non-agricultural zone districts to explicitly prohibit short-term rentals. So, I mean, I'm with Doug, and I think you should put a bullet in this thing's head. I don't know why we have to continue to drag this thing up.
And I for one member of Planning Commission, would not change that master plan if nightly rentals in the county were allowed. I understand the moot point about growth centers. If you want to designate somewhere at Stagecoach, affordable housing, condos, multifamily projects, that's fine. I'm all in. It's an area that we said long ago was going to develop. But I'm not going to. I have no interest in entertaining nightly rentals in White Woods, Deer Mountain Estates. And I think there were a lot of smart people. In my opinion, the master plan contains what it does today. For days like this, for days like when this stuff continues to be thrown against the wall to see what sticks. And for me, the Bible has always been the master plan. Because I believe in Rock County, I believe what it does, and to Bob Woodman's, he used to say it was death by a thousand cuts. And if that's what you want to do, if that's the path you want to go down, I'm okay with West Steamboat. You want to put nightlies out there and develop the units like we did Heritage and Silver Spur, we can do it. And I thought we did good jobs with those developments too. But this is so far from rural character, and we can debate all night whether this is commercial or it isn't, but it's commercial use. And I think that master plan is damn clear. That we put commercial and urban uses in urban centers, not throughout Rock County. That's where I'm at.
So, Troy, if what you say is correct, and I don't doubt that that's the case, that you don't believe that the citizens of our community have changed their view, that they really still do not want short-term rentals in the unincorporated part of Rock County, then I would submit to you that there's very little risk in an update of the master plan to address the issues that Commissioner Mocker talked about. If that's still the case, then short-term rentals won't be coming back.
Well, and I've indicated that the master plan, I think, was adopted with these types of provisions and policies. And you know what? I spent a lot of time with a lot of different planning commission members and a lot of different county commissioners that were they're great people. And I think they served this county for what rewards, I'm not sure. But to undermine what we have, I mean, I think I was clear to him in saying that if we want to talk about West of Steamboat, I'm all day long. If you want to talk about certain areas of Stagecoach, I'm all in. But it's one of the fundamental premises. It may have been the very first, in the introduction, the nature of the plan. The general goal of the plan is to ensure the rural character while accommodating appropriate development. And I think we do that too. I mean, we accommodate the bed and breakfasts, we accommodate the wedding venues, we accommodate guest ranches, we accommodate the program on the Steamboat Lake. Those are appropriate. But to commercialize and prostitute this county so some management company can make a whole boatload of freaking money, and then I start selling homes on 35 acres, not based upon all those rural values, but on the profit and loss of the nightly rental income. That's not what I want to do. And I think it's, there was a fundamental, much long ago, there was a Board of County Commissioners that really didn't care about their language, and they really didn't care about who was sitting in the audience. But they would have asked, does the population, do the people coming to Round County get their way? Or, if you want to move to Round County, this is how we do business. And I don't want to sacrifice that, because I think it's treated us well. I think we have a lot to be proud of in this county. And the conservation easements, and people valuing it, via you guys spending the PDR money that we voted for a second time to conserve our heritage and our rural character. So I can accommodate it, but not throughout Rock County.
Your comments are well taken, Troy. I think that, to circle back where Commissioner Monger was coming from, though, in terms of taking a look at the master plan, it wasn't necessarily with the idea that we'd really focus on nightly rentals. It was really to focus on transportation issues that are out there that perhaps are in conflict with the master plan, as I understand it. And so to that extent, I mean, that to me makes some sense. And I think to that extent, unless the commissioners disagree, I mean, I think that's an area that we could go forward on. I don't personally think the nightly rentals will ever service in that discussion. But I think that, again, I think to Doug's credit, there are bigger issues that maybe need to be focused. We already talked about them. The wildlife is an issue that's on our list. So I think we're jumping ahead, but I think that part makes some sense. And Tim, to your point, we went out and talked to the public at four different meetings. You were at a couple of those. We're not sensing wholesale pressure, so yeah, no.
So I'm actually anxious to hear from the other planning commission members about what they think about Commissioner Monger's proposal to really start enforcing our zoning regulations around short-term rentals.
So the way we're going to do that?
Well, to me, I'd say that it is pretty black and white, and I would say that Commissioner Monger's idea is something that we should do, since if we want to have it regulated, it shouldn't be just on a case-by-case, whoever's complaining, then the other people get their way and that kind of stuff, so hey, I'll pay you off or do anything on the side or anything like that. For me, it should be enforced. It is the law of the law. It is black and white, and so I would say continue on with not just having it be a complaint-based form of being able to regulate it on.
And do you have an opinion in terms of taking a look at the master plan in terms of the other issues, i.e. transportation, wildlife?
For me, I would say that to look at the master plan would be just to look at the growth centers and the potential updates that we could have with the West Annex and the different places that we could kind of consider to have different zoning regulations to be able to produce where we would want these short-term rentals, so that we would actually provide a little area so that they can, so that it's not just clear, no way, no how, anywhere in the county. I do agree that we need to keep a rural character, But I do think that there are places, and not just in municipalities, that we could actually grow from and have those donut areas where we could provide some short-term rentals in those areas.
Steve,
if I could?
Yeah. Yeah, on that issue of items that may be subject to the amendment of the master plan, that in Christie's memo included in your packet,
right.
Staff had come up with a list of items that we had seen and actually included two of the items that we heard from the Planning Commission recently. And so we were going to address those in a minute. I don't know if that was something that was part of, or should this be added to that list?
I was going to maybe clarify after Greg did what he did. Doug's comments about enforcement, I view that to be a BCC issue. I don't know if you know. I view that to be your issue, and that's a separate animal. What I was referring to is the Monger approach in terms of expanding and looking into the master plan in other areas. And I think to that extent, I mean, Chad brings it up. There's 14 of them on here. And I don't know if all 14 include Doug's or not, but that's where I was going to go into the question. Does that make any sense to you?
Sorry, a little confused with.
No, you're okay. You answered the question. I'm just eliminating part of the answer.
I would say for revisiting the master plan with the public input of what we had last time with 50 people and having a general consensus of the people that did come to have that meeting in 2017, I believe. Maybe it was 2015. I think that was a good enough demographics of how many people kind of showed up and what the general consensus of what everybody thought was still intact. And today, I think that's the same thing. I don't think much has changed from those, few years since the last time we discussed it. And I thought it was a good enough pool of people.
Jeff.
So am I addressing enforcement or not?
You are not addressing enforcement.
Okay, there were two questions, and we've gotten rid of them. I didn't mean to...
The one is the general concept, and
of revisiting the master plan.
Yeah, Doug's approach is, and I think it's appropriate, and we've actually outlined it here, that we take a look at the master plan in terms of a broad brush of a number of items. Transportation issues in the county, maybe housing issues in the county. I know... Wildlife is an issue in the county, and that kind of is on this list anyway.
Sure. Yeah, so I think plans need to be revisited from time to time. I was not on Planning Commission when you all had the opportunity to do that. What was it, 15, 16?
17.
17. Yeah, last year.
The drink.
That was just before.
Are you referring to the outreach series?
Yeah, that was
2017.
If these topics were discussed during the outreach series, then doing it every 2 years seems a little bit frequent for me. But by the same token, revisiting these issues, I think, is always a good idea. I'm definitely not opposed to Commissioner Monger's suggestion, but if we do it, I think great care should be taken that we don't need to do it again in 2 years. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. But again, what we did in 17 was just kind of solicit the public and ask for issues, concerns.
Point of order. Have we moved on to the discussion on the master plan?
I'm leaning that direction, but frankly, what I thought I would do, because I know there are people here in the public, I was going to maybe open it up.
It hasn't heard from the rest of the club.
Well, but I'm answering this question. So, yeah, we have, but not yet. I've just got to take a poll.
So maybe the question can be limited to changing the master plan for the purpose of updating nightly rentals. That's only a
No, we're not going there. That's not. No.
The rest of the update question is in there.
Well, we'll get to that, but yeah. Bill.
I think Troy nailed it right from the get-go. I got all 14 points, and... And I agree with Doug that we should crack down on the whole situation, but at the same time, do it slowly and look at it like we did. Christy just talked about the outreach program. If we did that and looked at all the comprehensive plans, stagecoaches coming together, more people out there, because we put parameters in the stagecoach's plan that said that every 1,000 people we were going to change all of their looks and traffic situations. I think that if we start cracking down on nightly rentals throughout the county, but are there areas that Oak Creek and Yampa that really want to commercialize this and go with the BRBs, I would still look at the process of cracking down on keeping them.
All right. Right.
Let me try it this way.
Right.
Were you going to try it a different way right before you got to
that's
me?
Kind of
just to speed things along a little bit. We're not going to talk about enforcement. I guess I'm interested to know, do the commissioners have any issues on a going forward basis addressing the master plan, not necessarily for the purposes of visiting VRBOs? Go.
Okay. So, Commissioner.
And again, before we go on, I am moving into probably the next agenda item, whether we like it or not. It's kind of a crossover, but that's fine.
We've already used into it.
Yeah.
So we're there. I was involved in this about 15, 17 years ago at the City of Steamboat Springs. Actually, it was over 20 years ago. And these things can really drag on. My only recommendation, if we get involved with this, and I'm good with it, let's get on with it. Let's do this in a year, year and a half. This is not a three-year project unless you allow it. And I don't think we're looking at so many items that we can't take this on and move through it with a timely fashion with public input. I would recommend item 15. Affordable housing. I don't see it on the list of 14. Right. I think it's a critical item.
Yep. Thank you. Carl.
So I guess what I'm hearing is, am I generally open to the idea of revisiting the master plan? I think we have agreed that it's working in terms of maintaining the overall goals that it was established for. So my opinion doesn't change that if it's not broken, don't fix it. However, I have heard some comments raised about three things in particular. Transportation, interactions with other communities, the Oak Creeks, Hayden's, other areas in the county, and then a specific concern for wildlife. I don't know that I, at this point, feel like there are obvious shortcomings in the master plan for any of those topics, but if folks feel like there are, I'm certainly open to hearing and learning about what those perceived shortcomings might be. If we can streamline that process and get through it in a timely fashion, that's great. You kind of take that as it comes.
Perfect. Thank you.
I believe the document calls for periodic updates, even kind of recommending a time frame, correct? Am I incorrect in that?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
So in general, I'd support that while continuing to acknowledge that we did come to a consensus that it's not broke, so I'll fix it.
Good. Thank you. Roberta?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that if we were going to entertain this process that it would be limited in scope, you know, so that there are only specific topics that could be addressed, because I think the master plan is great and it's been effective. Thank you. It's been effective. And, you know, to reopen the entire document seems to me to be extreme and not necessary at this point. So I would vote for selected topics if we're going to go down that route.
But in the end, move forward to that.
I have one comment on enforcement.
Yeah. Sure.
The thoughts that occurred to me yesterday that professional management companies in the state of Colorado have to have a real estate license. I'm not clear through what all those rules and laws are, but I do know that if there is a violation or a complaint to the Colorado Real Estate Commission about a breach of the rules or Colorado law against the real estate broker, once that complaint is made, the Colorado Division of Real Estate moves forward with the investigation. So I know there's a lot of criteria with property management, leases, disclosures, and I'm just suggesting that give me another couple of weeks and maybe I can be more educated on that topic. But if that was the case, it might make enforcement a whole heck of a lot easier.
I'm going to be a bit soft on this. I recognize full well that there, or at least I'm guessing, there are people in the public here that have come specifically for the purposes of addressing the VRBO thing or the 90 rentals. However, I think that based on what you can see is happening, I don't know that a lot of comment is really actually required at this juncture. You can see this kind of opening up in the air. Now, with that thought in mind, if you really feel you need to say something, I'm going to allow it, but I'd ask that you please keep it short, very short. So I'm opening up for public comment.
Is this specific
tonight? Why did I know this?
Specific tonight.
Can we make a comment on the master plan update, or is that coming later?
That comes later. This is only VRBOs right now.
My comment on the on what you just asked, I really appreciate the discussion here. I agree with the discussion, basic discussion about commercialization in the county, keep the county rural. That's all I say. I had more to say, but I won't do it.
Thanks, Ben. Again, please keep it short.
Good evening. I realize the shortness of it, but we've traveled about 6,000 miles to be here. We're from, my wife and I are from the Cayman Islands. The Cayman Islands. And
could you identify yourself, please?
I'm sorry?
Could we have a name, please?
My name is Charles Mobley. And we rent our place out. We came here on vacation for years and years. We fell in love with the place, like a lot of you. And we bought land in 1998. We bought 18 acres out below Eagle's Watch, out towards Lynx Pass. And we've just been informed recently that we've been short-term renting illegally, which we had no idea. And I think we built our place and started renting before the master plan in about 2000. So I don't know how this grandfather's in. But just from a perspective of my perspective, we're not money-grabbing people trying to get people's rent. We invested. We built a beautiful log home, and we decorated it with antiques and a lot of collectibles, things that we're in love with, things that I collected. And so it's not a money thing for us, but it's a necessity. Because we don't have anybody to take care of our place, and like I said, we're 6,000 miles away. Long-term rental is not an option for us because then it eliminates our place for our own use, and we come three or four times a year to enjoy the place. So just from a perspective of somebody who does rent, we're not looking to grab money from anyone. We're looking to contribute to the society, and we have a unique place, and not everybody wants to ski in and ski out. You know, we have a place out in the country on 20 acres, and I think that's a necessity, you know, around. We looked for places, and the best place we could find was Perry Mansfield to get a cabin out kind of in the country, and that was 25 years ago. So anyway, that's our perspective. Okay, thank you for your time.
Hi, Dave Maloney. I'm a real estate broker in town. I've been doing that for about 30 years here. I have clients that would probably fall on either side of the nightly rental thing if it was allowed. Some would like it, some would not like it. But really, the reason I stopped by tonight is because I'm working with somebody currently who would love to have something like this where they could do this in the county in an appropriate place. And I was having a really difficult time identifying what they could or could not do. I think.
Pretty clear now.
I actually disagree. I don't think it is. I would agree with Commissioner Melton's take that there's a lot of kind of iffy sort of language, and there's not really a map that says specifically where these things are. You know, what exactly is a growth area? What's in the vicinity of a growth area? You know, I'm taking Doug at his word that there's five commercial things and they're a quarter acre-ish each, so there's, you know, you're either in it or you're not in it. So my comment is just from somebody in the business of property in the valley, that having something, I heard something mentioned about like an overlay map or something like that, that kind of thing would be terrific, where if I just had something that said, here you go, if it's not hash marked on this map, you're not doing nightly rentals there, at least without the potential for some sort of violation. So anything that would help develop clarity along these lines, I think, would be helpful. And I'm just going to make a quick comment on the master plan and leave. I think after 15 years, there's been some major paradigm shifts in what's going on in the world, and it's time to review it. And if people that live in the county now want to see some different things, you know, I think it's time to look at that and address it. And can't not do it just because you don't want to deal with some of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing no others, I'll close the public comment portion. I'm sorry, Jeff.
Oh, a couple of comments I can follow up on.
Yes, I thought you would be.
So the Mobleys, basically check in with the planning departments. You know, and we can let you know what regulations were in place at the time your home was under construction. You know, but to the best of my knowledge, when, what, 98, that short-term rentals were not back then, but we can give you that information if you check in with us. Did Dave leave?
He did, yeah.
Oh, okay. Dave. Hey, I just say that, you know this. The planning department offers a free service. You know, we try and educate the community.
No, I get it.
And so I think it's pretty clear, you know, and I think I can speak on behalf of the planners as well, you know, that when we updated the zoning regulations in 2005, we went as far as to add a nightly rental line to the land use chart. And basically, if you follow it, it's not allowed anywhere but the commercial zone district. You know, and as far as the potential, you know, that's where, you know, the master plan comes in. And, you know, Troy's got that sheet, and we had many of his policies on the screen at that last meeting where, you know, if you ask for a change in the regulations, you got to start with the master plan. So I should say, if something like this comes up in the future, if you know somebody that is uncertain, have them call us.
I totally get it, and I have absolutely done that. I would just say the fact that we just spent the last hour and 10 minutes talking about whether this is or is not an issue speaks to the fact that it's not. But that's cool. My two cents.
Yeah.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. Thank you
for the comment.
It's closed?
I thought so, yeah.
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear.
Oh, quickly, go ahead. Quick.
Did you say the master plan came in 98?
The master plan is a guiding document, so if you want to know what rules were in place at the time, the regulations have been in place in 72. They've evolved over the years, but it would be not to check with the master plan, but to check with the regulations that were in place.
Okay, yes, because we purchased our property, I think, around 98. Okay, that's fine. And then one of my concerns, again, was going back to Mr. Troy's comment on the real estate agent, because that was a significant part of us purchasing property here, and our real estate agent was aware of our plan, our vacation home and then short-term rental. So I feel like in that sense, we were misguided as well. And now it's, you know, tough luck, sell your property, move out. You know, that's what we're hearing. That's our only option right now, is, well, sell your property and leave. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You also have a lot of recourse against the broker when they knew that.
So, moving on to the next item on the agenda. And then just to recap, I guess we can do that. Never mind. We're done with the VRBO for now.
Done.
Next item on the agenda, master plan, which again, we've been kind of wandering back and forth across it. So.
Yeah.
This may not take as much time as I thought it was.
No, I think you covered pretty much most of the presentation here, and we
You did such a great job at it.
There you go. You guys are good. So to recap what some of what Troy said, the nature of the master plan is, you know, the general goal of the plan is to ensure the rural character of the county while accommodating appropriate development. Our questions overall and our intent would be, have the needs and values of the citizens of Rowlett County changed, or do they remain the same as they were in 2003? And also, have circumstances changed to such a degree that some level of review or amendment of the plan and its policies is appropriate in order to properly address pressures of the population and tourism? I think we can all agree with that. You know, why an update? Plan should be reviewed every 5 years. It says that in the plan. As you all know, it's been 16 years. Arguably, we have recently looked at the master plan back during our outreach series in 2017, and the community reaffirmed the validity of the plan. But those findings were never formally adopted. And now we have changing we continue to have changing demographics and growth trends. And with that, that's good information to determine if the master plan adopted in 2003 still provides an accurate representation of the county. Some of the policies that we were discussing before, we put them up on the screen for you. We just pulled out five of them here. I would agree with Troy. I mean, there's numerous policies in the plan that are continuously used in our land-based decisions around the topic of short-term rentals and whether to update the plan. But these policies in particular often come up. And 33A, I think you're all very familiar with, new residential, commercial, and industrial developments, and uses should occur within the vicinity of designated growth centers and in compliance with the adopted comprehensive plans of those areas. 43B, use permits that significantly alter the historical use, intensity of use, or character of an area may be deemed incompatible with the plan. 63A, recreation and tourist-based development and use intensity should be comparable to traditional agricultural use intensity. Intensity of permitted use should be proportionately to permitted acreage. 10.3C, approval of development should be kept in our near growth centers. That is not a typo. That is verbatim of what the policy actually and how it reads. Some of these policies definitely need to be looked at just for that alone. And then 10.3, I discourage development that changes the rural character of historical agricultural uses and or practices. Troy, I believe you touched on that one as well. And so you went around the room before. We compiled this list as a starting point of some of the things that we feel need to be looked at the plan in an amendment to the master plan. When we asked both Board of County Commissioners and Planning Commission, some of those items are included in this list. Specifically from Planning Commission, that was connectivity and transportation around our growth centers and wildlife. And I have this as a Word document also, so if we wanted to build off this list, I kept a running list of some of the items that you all mentioned. We can add onto this. We can delete some items if you don't agree. But the intent would be to schedule some meetings from this point forward and get community input. We've received plenty of good information and input from this discussion, but we would then develop a timeline for completion and adoption. We would schedule the kickoff for a plan amendment this summer, 2019, and the completion of that document and the scope of the overall review would be dependent on what comes up through those discussions and what we hear are necessary revisions of the plan. So, at this point,
I can jump in here too. As as Christy, you know, had that list up on the screen, and as she described it in her memo in your packets, she says staff suggests that this list should be considered a starting point for possible amendments. But basically, when we sat down, reviewed the plan, talked with Planning Commission, this is what we came up with as a possible starting point. And I agree with that third bullet also, and Christy's, of course, wouldn't be there if I didn't, that the final scope needs to be contingent upon work sessions with the public. So that's kind of the wild card, you know, where, you know, like that last time we checked in with the Planning Commission, sure, it was under that umbrella of vacation rentals, but the question was, does the plan need to be amended, period? And Planning Commission said no. Tweaks, yes. Back burner, yes. So it didn't move forward at that point. But periodically, I mean, yeah, we haven't stuck to the 5-year, but yeah, it's put in, it doesn't sit on the shelf. This thing is put into action every day, and we get constant feedback on it. And periodically, it's maybe been a little while, but because of that discussion, that I have scheduled discussions with the Planning Commission based on the philosophies page. There's two pages worth of philosophies in the plan, and if there's any major differences, that's where it's going to arise. And each time I've had that exercise, that there have been no philosophical issues.
Thank you. I don't know where to start in this conversation. I would first echo, I think, you know, Commissioner Monger's point around looking at this plan. I would be supportive of the idea. If it's in the plan that we should be looking at it every 5 years, and my understanding of what happened in 2017 was community members who show up to these meetings, do you like the plan, yes or no? And to me, that is not a robust community engagement process to look at the plan and to identify whether the strategies listed are still the right strategies or whether there are changes to those needed. You know, if it's supposed to be forward-looking, I don't know how you can operate from a 15-year-old plan without affirming that the things in it are still the right things and identifying places that there might be changes needed. I have a little concern about the way that this was just presented. I would not personally make the assumption that we wouldn't employ a consultant to do some of this work. And I would hesitate to make an assumption that planning staff would fully take on this community engagement process and gathering feedback on the types of changes that may or may not be needed to this plan. I don't think, and I would also hesitate to go into this with the assumption that we're looking at it because it's broken. I think looking at it, to me, does not imply that it's necessarily broken, but I think it's a best practice to be re-engaging with the community, getting input, and determining where there are revisions possibly needed on an ongoing basis. So I know I made several points within there, but I said them because I think they're important. So thank you.
Yes.
Does staff believe that we can go enter into this process and limit the topics, or do you feel if you open it up, you open it up?
You know, I see it two different ways. You know, in 2006, the city and the county jointly adopted the amendment to the West of Steamboat Plan. It was a focused update. You know, I think the plan lists 5 items, and I think it took 13 months to get that done. You know, and so the approach was, hey, we're not opening up the whole thing. You know, but then again, at that point, it was 7 years old, and there were some specific concerns. You know, and the other one is, you know, basically, I used that plan example, the Steamboat Springs plan, about 7 years ago, city and the county said, okay, we're going to amend the Steamboat Springs plan, and then just opened it up to the community. They would start with a list of things that staff identified and held a series of public hearings, a lot of outreach associated with that to gain feedback from the community, and then really things weren't added to the list. You know, and so, yeah, that was the wild card, but it actually didn't even result in a change in that instance. So the planner in me saying that, how can you say you have a community plan if it's been 16 years and you haven't opened it up to the community to comment on it? But then again, like I said, it's put into use every day, and we feel, we should feel that it's only a certain list. So it's really up to you guys. It's your plan.
If I could, I'd like to answer your question a little bit. You guys are going to be driving the bus here. So it's the Planning Commission's master plan, and then we ratify it. So you guys, not staff, but you guys, the ones going to be driving the bus here. So you guys can figure out and again, we're then going to be, if we need some outside consultants, I'd like to keep it as cheap as we can because I don't think we can really, but at the same point in time, I'd like to, as Commissioner Melton has said too, I'd like to reaffirm that we're all in agreement here and have some adoption of it and ratification of it again. And even if we just change the front picture, you know, I'm good with everything that's in there too myself. But I think that, you know, we have readopted in 2019 would be a great thing, but you guys need to decide kind of on your own prerogatives how much you want to open it and what phases and how you want to address each of those sections in there, you know, whether it's transportation, wildlife, and housing and all those things as well. So,
well, Commissioner Meyer, what I'd like to know is what sort of a budget we're because staff does a fantastic job, but you know, there are only four or five of them, and Route County is a really, really big place. And if we're going to do this, I'd like to look at it properly the first time so that we're not discussing this a year and a half from now. Let's get it, look at it the right way, get you the support that you need. I mean, some of us have full-time jobs that we can't devote to running around. So maybe you need to discuss, if we choose to move in this direction, what sort of fiscal authority we have.
I think the commissioners have there's a conversation to be had how much we're willing to spend on this, yes.
Well, and I think it can, my opinion, I won't speak for my fellow commissioners, but it can go in both directions as well. It can be, this is what the extent of what we'd like to do and how much it might cost as well. I mean, we don't necessarily know how much a process might cost either. So I think the conversation can go both directions at the same time, in my opinion.
I think we have staff people that can figure out how to talk to some consultants and get a pretty good idea of what these kinds of things cost and come back to us and let us know.
Right.
I don't think that's the same as saying he gave you a blank check. But
yeah.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. No.
That word.
No blank checks.
I want to make one comment, Beth.
Yes.
When we did our outreach, just so you know, we literally went into the community. So for the north, we went to Steamboat Lake, and we went to Haven. It wasn't a case of inviting them here. We made it convenient for them to go there.
I'm aware of that, and I think my comment is more to the process of how it's reviewed. And again, I wasn't at those meetings, but my understanding is, do you still agree with the concept of the master plan? Do you like it? And I don't think there are a lot of people in this community that would say no to that question. Does that mean there's nothing in it that would be well served by being looked at, revisited, updated? I would say that's not true.
Okay.
Yeah, and to get to the question of the money, the more is the better, obviously.
It seems no blank checks. Didn't you hear us?
I heard Chief, but it seems like we need to scope it first and see what the size of the box is, and then staff can go to the commissioners and say, hey, we think we're dealing with this.
I'm going to reiterate that there's a couple of gentlemen back there that I think probably already have a good idea of the process that we need to follow to help determine that scope and cost.
And those folks happen to be the bosses of staff, so could that make it a little easier?
Well, and the other thing, before we get too far down the road, it's really going to be up to us, as Doug pointed out. So we'll have a meeting and sit down and go through this list and others and come up with, okay, where do we want to start? And how do we want to get the public in?
I think that's called developing a scope of work.
Yeah, I think so, too. Just to clarify. Any other comments at this point before I open it up to the public? Comments from the public on the master plan, revisiting? Ben.
Thank you.
He said.
Yeah.
I think you've all hit it on the head. It's just the what's in the master plan, we basically agree with. The 2003 date is a problem. It should be 2019 or 2020. It just doesn't look right being 2003. There should be some sort of update that's accepted by the community. My question is, and I think as this is the Planning Commission's responsibility, is what is the process of this update? I see, and I was thinking about this when I saw the agenda, is it where you throw the thing open and do everything, or does the Planning Commission go through in some sort of review and say, this is what we need to look at? They review that, they rewrite that, or however they do it, and they present that to the public. So it's a shortened form. I've been involved in too many of these things. You could get really involved. You could spend a lot of money and come up with what happened in 2017 that, or with the Steamboat Springs community plan, we don't need to change it. I don't think you want to go there. So I think it's up to the Planning Commission to set some parameters and then come up with this section needs to be looked at or this and do that and then present that to the public maybe as in some sort of format that's transparent that they can accept. Thanks.
Thank you, Ben. Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment section. Do we have anything else to discuss on this matter?
So I guess a question, and so staffed, and so I guess you guys are going to, I guess our process now as Planning Commission, you guys are going to have another conversation with staff, and then again, yeah, we need to come up. We didn't budget any money for this thing during 2019, did we not?
No.
That's what I thought. So there was zero money, so we need to come up with that. So
at least you know what our budget is.
Print some money and send the federal government.
So, again, to reiterate, I think, at least from my perspective, I think we can. I mean, the Planning Commission should have a conversation about the general parameters of what they'd like to do, and I think we give that information to Dan and Tom potentially, and let them figure out how to. Communicate with a potential consultant and get some rough ideas about how much money this would cost to achieve the goals that you guys have and we'll work on. Does that make sense to you guys?
We can include it in the budget process for for 2020 as well, depending on what we're going to do.
And I'm going to guess that for even in this current year, we could do a supplemental budget to at least spend enough money to figure out where we're headed.
Yep.
Okay. And then fund the process.
Would the board be interested in a conversation with staff regarding the merits of having staff do this? Or is that ship sailed?
We're certainly open to the conversation.
But I think it needs to be a conversation, in my opinion.
Sure. Wouldn't you take the position that the staff does what it can in-house and then the excess they can't?
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Okay, fine.
So, are we reaffirming what we said last time? That general housekeeping is sufficient to keep the master plan up to date?
I don't think we've had the discussion. We'll have a meeting to go through that.
I thought the last time we had a meeting we said that.
Well, I wouldn't argue, but I'm not going to.
On this topic. We went round and round about this, kind of had the same discussion.
We may very well do that again.
And said that through the housekeeping process, which has been going on, it's been an effective update.
in a targeted fashion.
It's possible.
Okay.
Have there been, can I ask clarification? Have there been amendments to the actual master plan document as a result of that housekeeping?
No.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is regulatory.
You're talking about loan. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Next item on the agenda. Tim, I think this is yours.
Yeah, and I'll make this really brief. You know, we have vacancies on the Planning Commission from time to time, and we also have, you guys have terms, and those terms, they're just that, they're terms, and they come to an end at a certain point in time. And it is a really difficult process for us as commissioners when we're deciding who to put on the Planning Commission. Especially, it's been my experience that by and large, all of you work really hard and bring really good perspective to the table and do a really good job. But in spite of that, I think it's important that these are not terms for life or for an unlimited period of time. And it's been my desire to make sure that we make room for some new commissioners. So what I'm saying is that when your term comes up, don't get your feelings hurt if we decide to replace you with a new individual in the community. That's almost certainly not going to be a reflection upon your service or the hard work that you've done. But it's important to me that we see new people come onto the commission. That's pretty much all I had to say about it.
Commissioner, I am one of the newer members on here, and I greatly value you two for inviting me back for another term.
I was there too.
Well, you were. You invited me back for a second. They brought me on.
Come on.
They brought me on. Your vote counted as well. Thank you, Commissioner Mel. What I would say to that, though, is especially as it relates to these historic philosophical documents, there is a lot of value in having members who have served a long time because, especially for those of us who didn't grow up here, they're able to point us in the right direction. So please don't clean house, right? I've learned a lot from the veterans sitting with me on the commission. So
I think it's a delicate balance that we need to find.
It feels to be a relatively new board, to be honest with you. I mean, there are some returning board members, but most of the people on the board weren't here when I started. I'm probably the longest sitting member.
So you're kicking me out? After all this time, you're kicking me out? I can't retire with grace and honor?
So, you know, I recognize what you're saying, but I think you guys do a good job of that in the interview process, because I don't think you would hesitate to grab someone else if you thought they had more energy or they were more willing to participate. So I look at the board and I see a lot of new faces on it within the last 5 years.
I agree.
Okay.
Anything else, Tim, on that topic? You're done. Christy, I think I'm back to you. Discussion of 2019 zoning and subdivision amendments.
I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty here. Trying to bring it up on the screen. It looks like everyone has it.
Yeah, we have a hard copy. Yeah. The old-fashioned way.
All right. There you go. All right. So actually, Alan's going to start off with value-added agricultural processing, an amendment to that definition.
Okay, so value-added agriculture. In 2016, the Colorado legislature amended the Custom Processing of Meat Animals Act, which now allows for the processing of poultry. And this change allowed small-scale producers to slaughter poultry and sell directly to consumers without going through any federal or state inspection for that product. There are certain standards that have to be complied with under this act. It allows for the processing up to 1,000 birds per year, and it does not differentiate between species. So turkeys, you can do 1,000 turkeys, you can do 1,000 chickens. It doesn't differentiate. There are a few standards that have to be complied with. Must be raised on the producer's own farm. Must be healthy when slaughtered. Conducted under sanitary standards, practices, and procedures. And it can't be sold to restaurants, grocery stores, or institutions. And so because of this change, staff was approached by CSU Extension and the Community Agriculture Alliance to change the value-added agriculture production definition and allowances that are contained within the zoning regulations. And because currently the only way that staff can process this type of operation is through a home industry special use permit. So staff is proposing some changes to the actual definition of value-added agricultural processing to include the processing of poultry. Currently, the definition excludes the processing of meat under these regulations. So the change would be to include the processing of poultry and then to add into the chart, which dictates what level of review the operation goes through, to include the number of birds, and it can be a little more clear. So for the small administrative permit, it would be up to 100 or more than 100 birds, up to 100 birds. Medium would be up to 250 birds, and then the large would be, no, sorry, I'm confusing myself.
I thought you were doing okay.
Yeah, I think you did right.
The only reason I'm confused is that it allows up to 1,000 birds, and
yeah, I was going to ask that question.
Yeah, and so
you're going to have to find a way to get 1,000 birds in there somehow.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe I think what I was the special use permit would be 500 to 1,000. Medium would be 250 to 500, and then small would be 0 to 250. That's what it should read. So, but it's the work session. So, if you don't like those numbers, we can still change those.
But in order to be in compliance with the new state law, you're gonna have to we're gonna have to find a way to allow for 1,000 birds somewhere in this chart.
Correct.
And this is for like Community Ag Alliance or farmers market sales type things.
Yeah, so private sales to individuals.
So they could actually be, we allow them on the side of the road now, too, farm stands.
Right.
And that was part of our process, too, was allowing farm stands out.
Where are they?
Well, it's snowy out there.
No, not
300 inches of snow, you can't have one.
Elkstone has one.
Do they?
So we have a permit process for it, yeah.
Yeah, this kind of mirrors the farm stand. Well, this is the farm stand regulation.
It's part of it.
You just add a line item for birds.
So one of the standards under value-added ag processing, accessory retail sales area shall not exceed 300 square feet. And then sales of products on site, in addition to those grown or processed on site, shall be limited to those clearly incidental and accessory to the farm products, or is declared and approved through the permitting process. So a farm stand would be considered accessory to the value-added ag processing.
So, Alan, work session, a couple of things. If we're looking at the left-hand column, percentage of product grown on site, do you grow chickens? You raise them, right?
Yeah, you raise them. I mean,
yeah.
I guess.
So we might want to change that. And then in terms of percentage raised or grown on site, doesn't the state law mandate that they all have to be raised on site on that farm?
Yes, I think so.
It does, yes.
Do they have to be born on site?
Raised. Must be raised on the producer's own farm. So, I mean, I don't think they're... I don't raise chickens, so I don't know. But I would imagine most people purchase chicks and raise them on their farm. They don't actually hatch them on
Why
their
not?
Own farm.
Yeah. I would think they would. But anyway,
okay,
what
it's irrelevant.
Yeah, right.
Well, they're irrelevant if we want to be in compliance with state law. So taking a look at that, whatever the state law is, you know, I think what we're trying to do is bring our regulations in compliance, right? So I like it. I like where this is going. I would just maybe take a look and make sure that it mirrors whatever
yep.
the state yeah. is.
Okay. So these are short-term chickens, correct?
No more
well,
short-term chickens.
They are.
None.
They have a short lifespan, and then they end up in your belly.
I'm assuming they're slaughtered as well.
Excuse me?
So we're slaughtering them here too, right?
Yes, slaughtering is part of
so,
it.
So who monitors, in the case of 1,000, I suppose 1,000 on a lot, who's monitoring the slaughtering operations? Where's the discharge going?
That is something that would be reviewed during the permit
okay.
review process.
And on your table under small administrative permit, you have acreage, any acreage, I mean... We've got acreage in the counties that are down to half an acre, or, you know, do we want 250 birds on half an acre, or is there a minimum there that we should be looking at?
Well, that is something that we would, of course, look at through the review process to make sure that that is appropriate on that site. I do have heard stories of one operator who, it's their chickens, it's raised on an adjacent property because the adjacent property has the acreage to support those, and then it's brought onto their site and actually slaughtered. So, and then there are some counties have animal units, and that is per acre. When we were going through these value-added ag regulations, we brought that issue to Planning Commission and the board's attention, and we basically got laughed out of the room. So currently, an agricultural operation can take place on a parcel that is more than 1 acre as a use by right, no approval necessary from the county. If it's a less than 1 acre, it's a minor use permit. And the only time that the county would get involved on those larger than 1 acre sites is if there's a public health concern, smell, noise, contamination of waterways, wells, things like that.
So getting back to the 1,000 birds,
mm-hmm.
these are arbitrary numbers that you place in the bottom row here. It's just somewhere along the line, there's got to be an allowance somehow within our regulations for 1,000 birds. But there's nothing magic about these 100 birds. We can choose to reduce that to 10. 50.
So these numbers were discussed with Extension and the Ag Alliance, and these are the numbers that we came up with that we felt were good thresholds that fell into each one of these categories. But of course, they're open for discussion.
Okay.
So I have a couple comments. So back to Commissioner Pattis's comment. So I'm a little confused yet now. So the regulations allow for a processing of up to 1,000, and for how, what period of time?
This is 1,000 in a year.
That's 2.74 birds per day.
And then it's state law, right? Correct?
State law, yes.
Okay. So the other, you know, I'm fine with all of this, and we need to, you know, you guys will work out the specifics on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we're going to have a 1,000 bird thing here. But anyhow, I'm fine with that. My only concern is that make sure that we're talking about the land use part of this. Any processing would have to go through our building permit process as well. So as we move forward, and I know you guys will and do and the rest, but I don't want to get any thinking out there that, well, your regs allow this and it's a use by right or a use by your permit. Well, yeah, it's a land use permit by right. And so we'll make sure that we're everybody's understanding. You still have to go through the building process for any processing,
yes.
Basically.
For any processing taking place within a structure.
Commercial, yes, to that.
So they could just go ahead and process their birds in 5-gallon buckets outside, Doug.
Yeah. Well, they could. Yeah, they could.
Okay.
And this is always in the A district?
Say that again?
This is always in the AC and the AF districts?
Yes.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? Why can't they sell the restaurants? Isn't that like the whole farm to take?
I think it's a health department issue.
Yeah, because if you're going to sell to a mass distribution facility like a restaurant, there's an increased risk of getting the public sick.
Hey, what about the people that sell truffles and mushrooms for thousands of dollars through the back door? Like, there's already a market.
Those are unprocessed vegetables.
USDA with the.
Like I said, as long as that's like a federal standard that we're following, or if that's something that just.
I think that.
It's like that defeats the whole farm to table purpose. Like, they don't buy processed, big, large scale processed chickens, they buy small scale.
So let me give you an example. Out at Ellisstone Farms, when they were growing lettuce.
Uh-huh.
And selling it, they could just cut the lettuce and sell it directly to a restaurant. But when they got to the point of rinsing the vegetables and packaging them in plastic, they had processed that food and it had to go through an inspection process. I think that to sell to a restaurant.
And a big concern with that is making sure that the water used to clean that lettuce or clean these birds is safe and clean. Another reason is that there are no, I mean, it says, the Act says processing must be conducted under sanitary standards, practices, and procedures. That's as far as it goes. It doesn't define what sanitary standards, practices, and procedures are. And those inspections are to ensure that standards, practices, and procedures are being followed.
So they could go through the process then of obtaining those and then sell to restaurants? That would be the only they would have to bring in.
I think in our planning regulations, I mean, then they would become a commercial operation at that point in time.
Well, I mean, there's no place to have that done in Rouse County, so
I'm just interested on any of the farm-to-table situations that occur right now, how they're doing it.
Because
it happens all the time. So
they're either selling to the restaurants unprocessed vegetables, or they're in or they're
chicken, lamb.
So there was an operation here in Rouse County that was processing chickens legally under USDA regulations and guidelines, so they could sell to restaurants, right?
Are you talking about Josh Kilbane? The landfill. So he went through the home industry and got approval to process the chickens and then therefore sell them. And he was in discussion with the USDA inspector and Craig for on his way out to Craig if he could stop at his place and do the inspections.
But the bottom line, the product was USDA inspected.
He never actually followed through with that and started processing them. But
if he was going to do it, he was going to have to get USDA inspections.
Yes.
So there's a process in place to help facilitate this.
Same with the lambs. I mean, when Willie sell their lambs and stuff, and they have to go through a USDA inspected place to be able to go to restaurants.
So just as far as direction on this, it sounds like everyone's in general agreement that this is something that should move forward. Is everybody okay with the threshold on number of birds?
Should the number of birds be related to the acreage at all, or no? What are...
Yeah, I guess I'd be curious to hear a presentation from the extension office why they think that 100 birds would be appropriate on a half-acre parcel or something like that.
Well, and I'm okay. Noting that on the more than 35 and less than 35, we have the exact same number in all areas here. So is
you know, it doesn't take a very big building to get 1,000 chickens in it. I mean, so... Yeah. Realistically,
it's really just a question. Is that
yeah? So I don't know.
And we're also talking about 1,000 birds a year. Talking to extension,
not at the same time.
Yeah, they were thinking that
2.74 birds per day slaughtered. I got you.
Yeah, that it would be over a. We do some this month, some the next month, some the next month, and so it wouldn't be 1,000 all at one time. It would be spread out over the course of the year. But I can certainly talk with Extension more to get some better understanding of how the acreage and all that stuff plays into it.
It just seems like more birds, you have more waste materials, and yeah, even though it's 2.74 a day, that you're just going to have more.
Mm-hmm.
That you need more land to support it, even though it doesn't need a lot. You're going to need somewhat more. So.
You can bring Bob back to talk about how much the land capacity can hold. That was always his deal, mm-hmm. Horses and wildlife. I'm sure he'd be happy to chime in.
I guess currently you can have a 2-acre parcel and have 1,000 chickens on it. As long as you weren't creating any adverse off-site impacts, you wouldn't have to come to the county for anything.
The odor could really kill you.
But it could be managed properly.
I don't know.
Depends on if they're free-range chickens, you know, or if they're corral chickens.
They're natural.
I just wanted to point that out, that currently you could have 1,000 birds on a 2-acre parcel, and as long as they were being managed properly, you wouldn't have to have any type of approval from the county.
So to Commissioner Pettis' question again around the percentage of product grown / raised on site, is what's being proposed here less restrictive than the state law that says that all of 100% needs to be on site?
Yes.
Am I understanding that?
And that was an oversight on
okay.
my part that will get addressed.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not intending to make it less restrictive.
Oh, no, not at
okay.
all.
So you're saying that they would all be 100% regardless?
Raised on site. That's what the state law requires.
But then if state law says... What did you say? 2.5 acres you can have 1,000 chickens? Somebody can do that right now in Rock County?
According to Rock County zoning regulations.
Oh. According to our current zoning regulations, they can have 1,000 chickens on 2 acres.
You can have 2,000 chickens on two acres. We don't limit
there's
the
no
amount.
There's no restriction right
There's
now.
No restrictions on the number of animals per acre.
Is there a similar restriction under state law?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. We just want to try to create some guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Andy? As verbs, the difference between grow and raise is that grow is to become bigger, while raise is to cause to rise, lift, or elevate. So grow may be the appropriate term.
There's other avenues to raise.
I'm sure, too, but you're talking again.
They're
grow
definitely
covered.
We grew chickens. And we butchered him in the basement with my grandmother. And the blood went down the drain.
Grow my company.
That's what happens.
We don't want to know that.
Whatever.
Grow my company.
Anything else on chickens?
Just one last comment. We're talking about the guidelines here, really. And each of these are going to have to come up with a permit. You guys, us guys, and them, even administratively, will have to take care of the trash that's going to be coming through it.
That was my issue.
Site by site time. Yeah. Each, you know, just to be, that'll be your job, our job, and their job to make sure that all the consequences are dealt with.
Actually, I just know what we did.
Yeah. I agree.
So you're not going to allow that?
No. Well, it depends on where it goes.
Yeah, fair enough.
sign code.
We have small
we're missing one.
But I did want to mention that housekeeping is scheduled next with the Planning Commission, and it's advertised as a discussion/adoption hearing to allow for that flexibility to move forward with items ready for adoption or continue the discussion on any of these items. So with respect to value-added agricultural processing, we all took some good notes. Do you feel that's okay to move forward to put on the adoption? It can always come off
sure.
for more discussion.
I think so.
Okay. The next item.
Small structures, I missed that.
The structure definition. We put this on the housekeeping list after some review of building permits. Some questions did come up. Regarding some elements that may be considered or allowed to be within the setback. So our structure definition includes, which is highlighted, some items that are excluded and are allowed to be built within a setback. The element in particular that came up was a paver patio. And it's not specifically excluded in the definition. However, it is also canceled out by when we created our small structure definition, which would specifically not allow a paver patio, for instance, because it states, where I underlined, does not exceed 120 square feet. So essentially a paver patio, if it was under 120 square feet, could be within the setback. So we really are asking, you know, what elements are appropriate to be located in the setback. And if you're okay with the list, that's fine, but we thought it was worth a conversation.
I don't have that part of the document. Does everyone?
That's what I was just asking.
Yeah, okay.
Are you missing page two?
Well, no, I have page two and I have page three, but that part at the bottom is not in my...
A structure supporting
no,
other
whole
buildings
second
unlocked,
paragraph.
Used for the purposes, yada, yada.
The definition of small structure?
Yeah.
Yeah. That entire paragraph, I think, is missing from our packet.
It
okay.
Is.
Yeah,
I wasn't
sure
that was
just
it's the second part under small structure.
Yeah, this isn't the packet. This is just the presentation. So for just the discussion,
it's there.
That
it's
was included.
No. See the
so you're saying a paver would be subject to the setback if it's greater than 120 square feet?
Well, the policy used to be, you know, deck less than 30 inches above grade didn't require a building permit. If you're going to do a paver deck, porch, whatever, that you're okay. You can approach into the setback. It was more or less the building permit that triggered that. And then came, a couple years ago when we did that small structure definition, and sort of one of the interesting consequences of that was we can't do that anymore. You know, if you had a paver patio that was in the setback that was larger than 120 square feet, it's, you know, like Christy said, is it supposed to have been disallowed? So we're just coming up with some inconsistencies.
So what's the change being proposed? What's currently in the regulations and what's being proposed to be changed?
So what you see there... under structure definition, that is the definition.
And that's already in
there? That's already in there.
Okay.
I just highlighted what the exclusions are, and a paver patio isn't mentioned in the exclusions. Recently, about 2 years ago, we created a small structure definition with the intent to allow some smaller structures to be allowed within a setback up to 4 feet. And the intent was for playhouses or pool equipment, small structures, less than 120 square feet. But by creating that definition, I think we we didn't allow ourselves the leeway with something like a paver patio. If it was more than 120 square feet. So by those two definitions, you wouldn't be able to build that kind of element within a setback. And so we're just asking, are there other types of elements or do you agree or leave it as is? I mean, we're the ones that see the building permits, and, you know, we're looking for permits and setbacks, and a lot of times people put a paver patio, and by definition, it can't be there.
So are you asking, should we just add paver patio?
Yes.
That's the only question.
Paver patios or other elements?
I have a suggestion.
Huh?
I have a suggestion. Patios or decks or parking areas could be added after the word roads. Roads, comma, patios or decks or parking areas less than 120 square feet. Doesn't that include it?
So I guess my question, the 120 square feet, is that 120 square feet in the setback, or is that total of the structure?
It'd be allowed.
No, I understand that.
Can you
so let's say it's 240. Is that allowed if 120 was in the setback and 120 wasn't? I don't know.
You have to have a building permit for that 140 square foot structure.
For a patio? For a brick patio?
No, but you mean in terms of your question about.
I understand. Okay, the 240, you'd have to have a building permit.
For 125 square feet, you'd
right,
have to have
a building permit. I've got that too, yeah.
If it was a shed.
A structure.
A structure,
right.
That kind of a structure.
Being someone in the profession, it happens, and I think not allowing it is kind of limiting to, because the understanding is that anytime someone puts something in a setback or an easement that is not, doesn't have a permanent foundation to it, if it has to get ripped out because something comes through, it gets ripped out.
Yeah.
And everyone attacks it from that angle, but to say that that's not allowed.
It's not an easement though, Andy.
No, I understand it's a setback. But the setback was the intention of the setback for the definition of a structure as a building, i.e. the sheds, a physical house, or are we saying that patios are structures? It seems a little... Now, a deck could be argued because a deck would sit on foundations.
Right.
But could it cantilever over? So I have a horse in this race, in a way.
So that's fixed location.
Yeah.
It's not. It's fixed. It's not.
So a patio, I mean, pavers are not in a fixed location.
They could be moved.
Right.
But if you poured concrete, that can't be moved quite
sure
easily.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, big equipment.
You should move a house with a thing.
So the problem is that you've had applications that have patio pavers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not sure whether they're allowed or not? Is that the problem here? I'm unclear on what we're trying to address.
Like stone deck on the ground.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
deck.
I know what it is.
Right.
That's where we're having trouble. Before the small structure
definition,
if it was an at-grade patio in the setback, any size, it was okay. Okay, and then along comes a small structure definition that says 120 square feet.
Can you make that bigger? Because we don't have the small structure. But no, I mean, literally, can someone make that document bigger?
So,
because we don't have the small structure definition in front of us.
So maybe think of it like this. I mean,
I understand what you're asking. Thank you.
I mean, I guess just more at a philosophical level, the purpose of a setback is to provide a buffer between one
yes.
house and the next one. So, I mean, for me, example, I live in Silver Spur. I'm up against a 10-foot setback, side setback line. My neighbor is, and if a neighbor had a deck that went out to the property line, he would be 10 feet from my bedroom window. So is something like that appropriate? The list that's included under structure definition, culverts, ranch entryway, power lines, electrical fences, garden beds, those are all pretty low-intensity uses or things. So I think that just needs to be considered with a deck that, hey, should it be part of that buffer?
But we're not talking about decks, are we?
Well, at grade.
Well, by the definition of small structure, an on-grade deck that's over 120 square feet can't be within the setback.
But what if I put pavers in my garden? but like a
I'm not being facetious. I mean, seriously, like, what if I make a path of pavers through my garden? Are we...
Just make sure there's not more than 120 square feet.
There you go.
But isn't that part of the... I don't know. Okay.
So what's Steph's recommendation? What do you guys... I'm having a hard time getting my arms around this, too, so I'm really struggling here, so... And again, you guys dealing with it, you know. And so, again, I appreciate, Chad, your comments about, you know, especially when we're already talking about some of these places being 15-foot separate rest. And then we have the situation in Moonhill as well with some of those places too. So,
yeah, the suggestion would be to add to the list of structure definitions of items that you can have within a setback. So if it's paver patios, we add that.
Let's go ahead and add those in. Yes, that's a good idea.
To the
list of exclusions. Pavers.
Yes.
From the list. Let's
right.
Let them be allowed.
Yep.
At grade.
Like at grade, because then that covers
at grade.
Location.
Okay.
Yeah. Fine.
Okay. Now, could we go to sign code? This was.
So, this one relates to the location that signs are allowed to be. In section 592. Currently, it reads no signs are permitted in county right-of-ways unless a permit is obtained. And then under the general standards for location, it says no portion of a detached sign shall be closer than 15 feet from the right-of-way. And so there's a conflict because one is saying no signs are permitted in the right-of-way unless a permit is obtained. And then in another location, it says signs can't be closer than 15 feet to the right-of-way. So we're trying to clarify or resolve that conflict. So we did consult with the Road and Bridge Department, and they said they did not want any signs in the right-of-way unless it was approved by them. So that is what... That's the change that is suggested under 594B. So add signs may be closer than 15 feet from the right-of-way with the approval of the Road and Bridge Department. And then there are some signs that are exempt from getting a permit, but the location standard still applies. So some of the signs that are exempted are signs that make sense to be in the right-of-way. And those are public signs and address signs, road signs, and directional signs. And since they make sense to be allowed in the right-of-way, but Road and Bridge wants to approve those locations, we added to 592 that public address, road, and directional signs may be located in the right-of-way with the approval of the Road and Bridge Department. And then another one of the exemptions is ranch signs, and we've gotten inquiries about ranches being able to put a sign for their ranch off of their property. And that was not the intent of the ranch sign. The ranch sign was signs limited to the name of the ranch, name of resident, and address of premises. And it's staff's opinion that those should be located on the property in which they relate to and not be able to be located on somebody else's property. So staff is suggesting adding to the ranch signs definition located on the same on the property in which it relates to.
So under this revised regulation, the sign for the Creek Ranch off of County Road 33 and the sign for Saddleback Ranch which is just off County Road 40, would not be allowed?
Those, correct.
Now they would be grandfathered.
Well, that Saddleback is a commercial sign, so it's a non-conforming sign.
It's illegal anyway.
Yeah.
Oh.
As good, okay. But no compliance.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, go.
What if the ranch starts off of the county road some distance and there's an easement across an intervening property?
The sign would fall under some type of easement.
The
agreement.
Sign wouldn't be visible from the road.
There would be something.
But you could put your sign on the neighbor's property, right?
Not according to the new change.
Oh, because it's not yours.
Right, right.
But well, you could put it on the neighbor's property, just not in the. It wouldn't be exempt in that case, right?
But as written, it's not her property. So it's not her property. She couldn't even do the neighbor.
So I guess to go back to our master plan concept, how commercial do we want all this stuff to be? So, I mean, we could be advertising when you leave the city steamboat for 129 that something's 20 miles up there, you know? So I guess I don't know why. I'm a little concerned, too. I don't know how far I'm supportive of the direction we're heading, that's what I should say.
I got a couple of questions. I mean, you've seen probably for years that one that was at the intersection of Studer's,
yep.
B4 or whatever,
yep.
And there was about 15 names on that.
Yeah.
Fred Wolf and everybody up Deep Creek.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still there, but.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that, but if we're advertising the home ranch or something, when we leave out here at the
129
county boundary, I mean, not to pick on them, but you know, I don't think that's quite appropriate either. So,
not leaving that thought because I think it's good when. But while I'm still thinking of it, how did you pick public right away? Because it seems like there's an awful lot of subdivisions in the county that are private roads. So is the intent here to say private roads and public right away?
It doesn't say public right of way. It does just say right of way.
Maybe under
B1?
Yeah. B1 does say public right
of way. You're talking about 5 feet from every boundary line or 15 feet from any public right of way. What if it's a private
right? I see what you're saying.
So, well, think about it, Troy. Do we really want to restrict people's ability to put a sign on their own private road?
Well, no, but I think this does.
Oh.
Or at least it's silent.
Okay.
It didn't address private.
So I think the intent of that was to not interfere with road and bridge, snow removal, and maintenance operations.
Site distance.
This may be hard to believe, but it's been my experience that people don't know where the right of way is.
I mean, I think that's everybody's.
Yeah. So, in any event, you're creating a mint for me. I may change my whole business model based on this. So, I might suggest you make it relevant to what you're trying to do, which is a certain clearance from the road. The road could be anywhere in the right of way. What Road and Bridge is concerned with is maintenance, the ditches, and stacking snow. So if you try to get into the question of the actual right-of-way line, which is vastly misinterpreted by many people, you may be barking up the wrong tree. You may be better off making everything relevant to the traveled roadbed itself. Prohibit the right-of-way stuff. Prohibit it going in the right-of-way. But getting in 15 feet from the right-of-way, my cash register's going.
Well, how else are you going
to... We're trying to help you out here.
Yeah. What's your definition of the traveled road?
The edge of the traveled pavement. Road. I mean, that's pretty...
I think the right-of-way is a definition we can stand behind.
What, it's the center line of the roadway?
But hold on. I live in a place that prescriptive easement. Right? My property goes to the middle of the road. You technically don't even have a right-of-way, but you still have the same sign issue.
Oh, yes, we do.
Yes. Now, you have a prescriptive easement.
And that prescriptive easement covers the right-of-way.
That prescriptive easement is arguable between attorneys. And I'm dead serious here. It's arguable between the county attorneys and private attorneys.
You're kidding.
No. Not attorney. Well, I'm serious about the right-of-way issue.
I see where you're coming from. Yeah. So the commissioners are of the opinion that you're comfortable with allowing signs in right-of-way, you know, I think we could, you know, at least add language that in that scenario, what would be appropriate.
Yeah, you want to get this stuff out of the right-of-way. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I don't think we want them in the right-of-way.
No, you don't want them in the right-of-way.
Okay, good.
Why not
just say any sign has to be approved by a road and bridge and leave it at that? Because this is requiring permits. This is requiring permits anyway, right? Like, if you want it, you got to get a permit, right? Approval of road and bridge, that's the permit. And then 5.9.4b1 says you got to get a permit. So why don't you just remove this and just say any signs have to be approved by road and bridge?
Well, like Alan said, whether it's an exempt sign or a permitted sign, the location criteria is still applies.
So the exempt signs don't require a permit.
But you still have to abide by the locations.
Well, why not then just put the location down under exempt signs? Any sign that is not exempt has to get an approval by road and bridge. And then you take the location stuff and put it down underneath the exempt signs.
Then they're not exempt anymore because you have to get approval from road and bridge.
No, they're still exempt. It's the location that goes down. The road and bridge stuff goes away, but you just indicate that it can't be 5 feet, 15 feet, whatever. You put that location portion, which is what concerned Chad, down under the exemption, so now all of a sudden they know where they can and can't put it. Or even then. Exempt sign, yeah, it's exempt, but you still got to be told by road and bridge where it has to go.
Whether it's in the right-of-way or not.
Road and bridge would tell you where the sign, it's an exempt sign, but that doesn't mean you get to put it in the middle of the road. We're going to tell you where on your property you get to put it.
Does planning staff feel like they need to take this back and have more conversation? This doesn't feel like the proper venue to wordsmith this particular.
Well, Rick.
Okay.
Got it. We've got enough to go on.
Moving on. The next one is purely very simple. It's a typo found in the attorney opinion. Where the opinion should read issued, not issues. So the staff recommendation is to correct the typo. No objections.
Good with that one.
All right.
There we go.
The last item. Just has to do with a current practice having to do with trailers as being accessory to a building permit, an active building permit, that is, and that they can live in that trailer for up to a year. This is essentially coordinated through the building department and planning department, but there really is no there's no permit process for it, oversight to ensure. I mean, there is the building department does go out and make sure that they have hookups to sanitary and electric, but this seems to be coming up more and more.
What did you just say before that? The building department does what?
They make sure that there are hookups for sanitary and electric.
I don't believe that's actually the practice.
So what if it's self-contained? Yeah.
Therein lies the problem, right? Which is one of the reasons why we're here.
So we recently are finding out some of these shortfalls happening in the process, that being one of them.
So under our camping regulations, when we have someone that wants to do extended camping,
yes,
which they're allowed to do for up to 6 months,
that's
as I
correct.
Recall, part of that process is to get an inspection from Environmental Health.
It's through a minor use permit through the planning department. It's essentially a counter permit. And
but there's a referral to Environmental Health to take a look. So why not just process these under our current camping regulations?
So the recommendation would be to come up with a process for this, or have this under our current process for a minor use permit.
So the problem that I can see there is that 6 months may not be long enough for some of these people that are building a house.
Well, historically the policy has been a year. And
is there a policy, or this is...
It's just, I mean, it's gone
a practice. Practice.
That's a yes or no question. Is there a policy? Thank you.
So how would we accommodate an individual? Because our current camping regulations really do limit you to 6 months.
Right.
How would we accommodate somebody that really needs a year?
I think we could come up with a specific minor use permit for this use.
Yeah,
so outside of our camping
yeah, they're
regulations.
They're building a house, and they're making headway on it.
No, I would like to allow them to have a year, and our camping regulations would not allow that.
That's correct.
So we would have to have a separate regulation to
address
this.
And that would be
the
intent.
But it would look a lot like our camping regulation.
That's right.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Would it be totally out of order to add another sentence that basically says this does not supersede local covenants and restrictions?
Local what?
Covenants and restrictions.
Yeah, with this direction, we'll provide what the section, Chapter 8 standards would be. And yeah, we can add that in there as a standard.
I just don't want,
this isn't the language specifically
okay.
we would include.
Yeah. I just don't want somebody to walk into the building department, pull this permit, and think they're going to be able to build a house in a subdivision that doesn't allow anybody to do anything on that lot.
Right.
Other than build a house. You can't live on it before you build it.
Well, that's the way it is. I mean, the HOA regulations supersede our regulations.
I know that, but a nice reminder would help.
Okay.
Because otherwise, well, it says here. But it's like, yeah.
Well, we've got that also in federal local.
Yeah.
Rex.
Brian,
call
over here.
I'm sorry.
Two guys over here.
Carl, I just have two comments. I personally had an aux score that relates to some of these issues, so I take that into account. But is there a distinction between an active building permit and a foundation-only permit? I'm seeing this to say active building permit.
Well, second thing. Oh, I can ask that now.
Sure.
So when I would consider a foundation-only the beginning of the construction phase.
Okay.
And since, that the clock would start with either full permit or foundation-only decision.
Okay. Second thing, for this situation, certainly, but also in my view, given my experience, perhaps for even extended camping, that issue of setbacks comes up, and if people are going to be using the trailer for essentially a temporary permanent dwelling.
Right.
I think suggesting they step back from a property line is a reasonable
consideration.
Yep. But at least in your case, Carl, the 1 year limitation would have been pretty beneficial.
Sure. And I think if he comes up with the standards, it could include that in the setback thing as well.
Yeah. Well,
right.
I'm saying we should.
Right.
I should. I agree.
Okay.
Thank you.
Brian.
Also, having done this personally, I don't know if I should have ended up on this commission.
Don't worry, Tim's going to get ready.
Heaven forbid, I don't know where the road is because I've laid out hundreds of miles of them. But that's another thing. You need more than a year, realistically, north route, the building season, to build the sweat equity in, to get the affordable housing component. And a lot of people that are doing this thing, owner-occupy a trailer or a camper or whatever, and they may even move it off-site for a few months, come back the following building season, do it again, and finish it up. So it's north route was, in my mind, at least two building seasons to get through that process.
I'd be comfortable with 12 months total.
I'd be comfortable with the idea that there could they could apply for this minor use permit to be extended, and the situation could be considered if they are actively building and they're making progress and they need more time.
I'd be supportive of that too.
Practically speaking, everybody's going to come in with a hardship case and say, "Oh, you know, this is taking longer than I thought. I need 2 years, and at the end of 2 years, I need a third year because I'm still working on it." I mean, and then we end up with a situation like what Carl had, where that situation was abused. I don't know.
but if they have to reapply, I mean, isn't there room to identify that it's being abused and stop it, or
building
not?
Permits only 2 years anymore.
Pardon?
Are building permits only 2 years?
Three.
Three.
And they can be extended.
Well, but that'd be the time to catch this too. Never mind.
Well, if the setbacks are observed, it's less. In my case, it would have been less problematic in the long run. So whether it's a year or two or whatever, it's a lot easier to deal with.
But it was a little, in your case, you know, it was a little disingenuous. The individual was, practically speaking, was just living there, and they were not actively pursuing a building permit. So I suppose I would be okay with that as long as the commissioners or the planning commission are willing to be, you know, to really look at it and determine whether or not the individual really needs an extension or if they're taking advantage of the regulation.
So the way it's drawn up right now, it's a minor use permit, administrative approval. So at any point, would you guys want to see this?
Well, you always have the option to kick it up to us if you think there's a problem there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know if the other situation applies that much. I would be supportive of an extension myself. It takes a long time. And the other thing is they could be building a barn and living in the barn, you know. In the meantime, we don't even know nothing about it.
People actually do that?
Yeah, they do that.
And we want to
raise chickens in the barn.
1,000 of them.
Yeah, they grow them.
But only short-term chickens.
2.74.
All chickens are. I think we're getting
punchy. I think so. So you want to reconsider and redraft a bit?
Yep.
Thank you.
Gotcha.
But in general, sounds like move forward.
Yeah. And the backside, no one ever came and inspected our trailer, by the way, you know, which was hooked up to the leach mound in the time we did it.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, some formalized process, minor use permit, where we can actually deal directly with the environmental health and the building department. And it's become, you know, 15 years ago, we might get one of these requests or it might come to our attention every other year or so. We've had, what, four in the last year? I mean, they're becoming more popular.
People are digging foundations in the wintertime now. It's madness.
Well, it was raining.
Next item on the agenda, open space and public sites.
I just did case.
Am I doing that right?
I think it's madness.
Yes.
Last. So who's doing
my work in the winter?
Alan.
I am.
Well, that's from Jeff.
Jeff,
so, yeah, I'll get to Jeff Link's comments.
Okay.
So we're here to discuss Section 3.5 of the subdivision regulations. It's the open space and public sites section, and we're here because recent review of certain subdivision applications revealed that our regulations may not be consistent with state statute. And that's...
I'm a little concerned here. I didn't know that this was going to be on the agenda tonight. I think this discussion is way premature. I haven't agreed with this interpretation. And I haven't agreed with our attorney. We haven't had our attorney-client conference on this stuff regarding our old payment and lieu, fees and lieu. And I guess I'm just a little leery that this is a little premature. I haven't agreed to the concept of this whole thing. If we're talking about how we're going to be moving forward on the new calculations, I don't know that we've agreed that I still haven't agreed to the whole concept of parks and schools only. So how we could be having this conversation. I'm still out there taking care of Mr. Warnke's fire district and the rest and some other things that are out there. So I haven't
we haven't exhausted the remedies in commissioner's level to determine, and I'm going to get another opinion from our attorney, too, or another opinion from a different attorney. And if I don't agree with what we've been, and I haven't been given, I still have the papers from the stuff that we were given back in 2013 from Mr. Merrill. Open space and open spaces and public site requirements. 5% is for public sites. This is out of the legal disclosure from Mr. Merrill. 5% is for public sites such as schools, fire stations, and other necessary public facilities. Now, that's what we've been interpreting the whole time since I started this fee in lieu thing back in 2001. And so now we have a new opinion. So, well, no, it's only parks and schools. I'm sorry. I can't buy that. And we've been selling this stuff when I'm coming back to you guys all the time in the Planning Commission here and saying, no, we need to get that $1,400 out of these replats up there at Steamboat Lake and Stagecoach. And I guess I've just been taking this on the wrong premise, and I've been selling a bill of goods to the people that I thought I was telling where this money was going to go. And I'm still pretty damn upset about it. And I'm not done fighting with it yet, so I think we're premature on where we're heading here.
So how about we just take it off the agenda?
I'm fine with tabling it for now until we end up having some more conversation.
No, I'm particularly in circumstances.
And again, I'm not sold on... I've got a stack of papers here that are coming from three attorneys before Eric has presented the last information that you guys have, and we're supposed to have, I think it's on this coming Monday, we're supposed on coming Tuesday or sometime in the short future, we're going to be having a discussion, and that's a huge discussion to me, because as far as I'm concerned, if we're not helping the fire district and we're not providing perks and whatever, I'm sorry, the school's got enough money right now. I don't need to get some more. And by the way, we were supposed to have a presentation tonight about where we're going to have it later, about how much Steamboat Lake, there was some school lots that got allocated out of the Steamboat Lake subdivision, and the school got some of those lots. And I asked about that specifically. And
but didn't we buy them back?
Did
we buy them back, though?
So I guess I can answer that question for you. There was never a formal dedication on any of the Steamboat Lake plats for schools or park sites. In the covenants for filing 5, there was a mention of a school and park site adjacent to County Road 129, but there was no formal dedication nor acceptance by the school district or any park entity that we were able to find.
Well, they got some lots, because I think I was here when they sold them. Brian, you might have even been on the school board then. I don't remember, but...
I sold them.
You sold them?
I'm serious.
So I'm a little concerned.
They're gone.
And you got the money?
They were, yeah, actually, it became...
We bought them back, though.
No. It became... They were dedicated to the school district. They were 220-acre parcels directly abutting Highway 129.
Right.
And they were on the left-hand side. As you go past the sewer plant, you entered the first one. They were long and skinny, and the power line runs through them. They didn't have any practical use. So we were catching quite a bit of flack from the Steamboat Lake Homeowners Association because they wanted open space. They wanted the common area in filing 1 and 2, and Lifetime Homes ended up owning it. We had these 220-acre parcels. We had a school down below that was in trouble, the North Route Charter School. We granted the North Route Charter School $100,000. We sold the two parcels to the Homeowners Association for $100,000.
I know that. We bought them.
Yeah.
This is why we're bringing in new measures.
That's long we...
That's what became...
Then we ended up with the payment on the taxes.
Yeah.
My question is, I just think... We're a little premature here having this discussion.
I think
and again, for me personally, if we can't do this with some other things, I'm ready to, you know, maybe the bigger subdivision, but man, these replats, I mean, I felt bad, you know, tabbing them for $1,400, and I thought I was tabbing them for something, you know, that they'd actually see benefit up there in North Route. not sending it. I mean, I'm sorry, I love the school too, but all the schools, but I didn't really plan on sending that money back down to the Steamboat School District down here. So anyhow, enough said.
Okay. I believe there are two separate issues. One is this question about how these fees are calculated, and then the other is the question about how these fees are expended. And it's my understanding that staff has been given clear direction from us and from legal on both of these. So I agree. I'm not sure why this is here as part of our conversation tonight.
Okay. Do you want me to answer that?
If you have an answer,
well,
sure.
The splitting it in half and how these fees are spent, that's the focus of next Monday with Eric's time.
Yep.
Going back to this half and what they're accepted for, you know, there have been a couple of cases that have come up in the past, but it was mainly the Purcell, you know, because the way the regulations are stated, typically it wasn't an issue because the $1,400 or maybe the 5% numbers were so low that it wasn't worth going and getting an appraisal done and coming up with, you know, the higher number. And so usually...
Not appraisal, a study.
Well, it's an appraisal based on the subdivision if completed. So it's based on the plans, but... So right about that time when Purcell was happening, attorney staff, planning staff noted some inconsistencies between the regulations and state statutes.
And has that been discussed with the attorney's office?
Yes.
And has a resolution been suggested by the attorney's office?
Well, that's kind of what we're doing here today, because the intent of staff was to redraft this language in our regulations to more closely match with the state statutes.
So maybe I can help a little bit?
Yes, please.
I think that, I think Doug already said this, Eric has provided an opinion. Doug does not agree with that opinion.
And I haven't had the discussion, and I don't have the papers for it either. I mean, he hasn't provided...
But on this, about the calculation of the fees?
No.
That's what I understand is on the agenda,
But when we talk about the calculation of the fees, we've only got two calculations. One's based on schools and one's based on parks. We don't have a calculation for these other situations.
So it's related.
And that would require a nexus study. And basically the formulas that you see right now is a simple nexus study. You know, how much park land, how much school land do you need per population? You know, but when you get into, it's easy. I basically just call the parks departments. I call, you know, Pascal School District, and I got these numbers easy enough. But when the research was done to get to where we are, especially right now during that Fox Grove subdivision time, you know, some of the bigger municipalities in Denver did that nexus study to cover those things like fire trucks, libraries. I mean, any of that public infrastructure. You know, those studies can get pretty detailed, you know, but just, again, sticking to language in the statutes, bare bones, that's what you have in front of you.
I don't really want to discuss it without the opportunity to discuss it with legal.
So the other point that I'd make, too, is, Alan, you included the copy of the statute. You know, it says subdivision regulations adopted by the county commissioners pursuant to this section shall also include... This is the important part, as a minimum. So, you know, provisions governing the following manor sites and land for schools and parks, as a minimum. So I'm just really struggling here yet. So, Mike, I would like to see us, you know, I appreciate you guys. If, again, Fox Grove and those kind of things, we still need to have some fee in lieu. It doesn't make any sense for 5-6 lots to allocate 5% of the land, which is going to be unusable for a park or for the school or whatever else, too. So I think we need to help you come up with the calculations. My question is back to the broader concept with as the minimum and the schools and parks. And so we can continue, as Commissioner Melton says, if we want to continue having some discussion on schools and parks and the rest, or, you know, we can do that as well.
No, I think she's ready to set this aside.
Okay. Do you need a motion?
And I would say that too, just part of the whole timing thing is that when Purcell was coming through, that was the same time that group had the Stagecoach Ski Mountain under contract. So there was potentially a lot of subdivisions on the near horizon if they were successful in purchasing that property. So there was kind of a fire at that time to get this squared away. And then that went away when those guys went away. And it was just kind of timing that, hey, we got a joint meeting. Maybe we can talk about this. But I totally understand.
And again, I guess the other comment that I'd make on the broader perspective is we kind of left it up to planning, you guys. And then our legal counsel has also said you guys, the commissioners, shouldn't be negotiating at the last minute to work out a deal. Well, we can't do that. So somehow we need to come up with a formula so that we're not negotiating at the last minute. And then again,
I think he's got the formula.
I agree.
I mean, if we were all in agreement that we were only talking about schools parks. We'd be able to proceed with this conversation. But if it's going to be wider than that, then we've got to have a discussion about the other formulas that we'd have to use.
And the problem with Purcell and how that really brought it to the forefront is because they didn't give us anything. I mean, they basically wanted to argue in front of you. You know, that they said, hey, our public dedication is oversizing our water pipe. And our comment was, well, it's not a public dedication, it's public sites. Because I think, you know, they were using the words public benefits. And, well, no, it's the public site dedication required. And so,
Our public benefit was providing five places to put houses. That was public benefit, right?
Yeah,
I'm just arguing. Being facetious.
So I think we should move on past this and address it later. I think we've done enough with this.
Well, just so you know, I think that one of the big problems Planning Commission has had when we were looking at this, even though we kind of kicked those things up to you, but could we take those fee and lieus and use them for something else other than parks and schools?
And that's a discussion between us and the attorney.
That's the discussion that needs to happen.
If we get that answer, it could be very helpful.
We can finish this discussion.
And as Commissioner Monger mentioned, it's on our agenda to have that discussion. So,
you know, and I'm sympathetic with the Commissioner Warnke's situation. I mean, you could have a place that making more taxes for his fire district without a house on it, without 5 acres. It's more beneficial to you to not have a house.
29%.
Exactly. So 29%, and then you consolidate five lots that were worth, you know, whatever, and then add a $500 or a little cabin on the thing, and you get your 6.9%. Yeah, that doesn't add up.
7.2, but yeah.
It's going down, don't worry.
I hear that, but I don't want to talk about it.
Anyhow, thank you. I appreciate we taking this off. And again, we can have a conversation at a later point in time.
I think other than that, unless there's something else floating around that's not on this piece of paper, but I wouldn't talk about it anyway. I think we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question.
I have a question.